Good morning. I'd first like to thank my co-author, Phil Johnston from Texas Tech. And as he mentioned already, we are going to be discussing an analysis of South Plains ginning costs today. Now, as most of you in the room know, cotton is rather important to our industry and to our economy. The National Cotton Council tells us that cotton contributes approximately $27 billion in revenue annually through all areas of the marketing chain just to the U.S. economy alone. Now, important information for our study. As many of you probably know, the number of gins are declining. Now, just looking from the years 1995 through 2007, the number of gins in Texas declined from 391 to 271. Now, that's a loss of about 10 gins per year. Now, interesting note, during that same time frame, the average number of bales gin per gin went up from around 15,000 bales a year to a little over 40,000 bales a year. So we're seeing lots of pressure on our gins to handle more cotton each year. And so that's one thing we're going to be focusing on today. The study objective, we're going to analyze operating income, operating expenses, and thus profitability for gins in the Texas High Plains and the Rolling Plains region. We're looking for the 3 years, 2005, 2006, and 2007 crop years. Now, this was rather eye-opening graph for me. If you look at this, this is production in the High Plains and the Rolling Plains of Texas alone for the years 2000 through 2008, which is still an estimate at this point in time. But if you look at that first four set of years and average those, our production was about 2.7 million bales. Jump ahead 4 years, and our production has skyrocketed to average 5 million bales. So just in a short time frame there, we've got a lot more cotton that we're handling. Now, why did this happen? Well, we all know we had a couple of good, really good weather years, but what does it come from? Mainly some of those new transgenic varieties that are out there that have really, really bumped up our volumes. Now, the information we have. We have audited income statement data and volume data for 43 gins in this area. Now, this data has come from a CPA firm, D. Williams & Company, located in Lubbock, Texas. They handle lots of gins in the area. Now, prior to us receiving the data, it has been what I'll call sanitized, which means all I see are numbers, and I see the region that they're located in. Now, if your gin is in that region, and you are a customer of D. Williams & Company, and you say, hey, is my data in there? I'll say it probably is. And you say, how do I compare? I can't tell you how you compare, because I don't know which gin you are. I have gins 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and that's all I know. So in the paper and in what I'm going to present today, you can see where you fit in there, and then you can kind of apply that to your own situation. Now, we've taken that data, and we've averaged it for the years 2005, 2006, 2007. We averaged the volumes these gins have. And from that volume average, we place them in a size classification where they remain for all the 3 years of the study, regardless of whether or not a single year falls out of that range. And the three size classifications that we have are less than 30,000 bales, 30 to 45,000, and then those gins that fall above the 45,000 bale range. Once we've done that, and once we've kind of put that data into the different size classifications, we're going to look at the results in two different ways. First of all, we came up with a simple average for the two regions based on their different size classifications. From there, we've combined that into a weighted average in per size classification, and we weighted those gins based upon how many gins are in each of the regions in that size classification. And then secondly, we're able to look at the data separately, the two regions separately, and see if we've got anything that we can study when we kind of compare the two of those. So, to make it a little easier on you, hopefully you can read these numbers. First, I'd like to direct you to the yellow numbers. Now, what we have here, this is the weighted average of those two regions combined, and all we've got them divided, and I'm showing you the average of the 3 years in the size classifications. Now, in the paper itself, there is the individual year, so you can see how these averages came about, so you've got more data in the paper that you can refer to. But just some information we want to look at here. On the income side, first of all, in yellow, ginning margins. One thing we thought was rather interesting I'd like to point out on ginning margins. Ginning margins have been, while they're not the same, they're very similar for the different size classifications. There really is not a lot that we can say about a larger den does better on the ginning margins versus a smaller den, because we're really not seeing that. Those are fairly the same across all the different volumes. Now, secondly, custom ginning. Custom ginning is a little bit of an interesting thing here that we can talk about, and I'll go ahead and refer to what I'm going to talk about next as we divide the gins up. If you look at the study time frame, 05, 06, 07, 05 and 07 were really, really large years. And so for that time frame, we saw some custom ginning. Now, we saw the custom ginning in the high plains, but not in the rolling plains. The high plains were the gins who had that. So first of all, that information is in this data, because once again, all the gins are in this set of data. But if you see there, the larger gins do have more custom ginning income as you increase that. And that's something we'll see a little bit more as we move into some other things as well. But some important stuff to note here is that the larger gins obviously can handle a little bit more, so some of those gins are able to pull in that custom ginning income from other neighboring gins. So those have more income there. Next section, cottonseed margins. Now, cottonseed margins is another interesting thing that we can apply here, and from what we're going to see later, the picture all comes together here. As we know, cottonseeds prices are up. So during the study time frame, the cottonseed margins are up from what you would look at from prior years. Now, what a cottonseed margin is the difference between what the gin can sell the seed for and the income they give back to the farmer for that. Now, you see here, interestingly enough, that the cottonseed margins drop as the size classifications go up. Now, why is that, you may ask? Well, one thing we see when we divide the gins by region is that our larger gins tend to be more in the high plains, and our smaller gins are more in the rolling plains. Well, if you look in the high plains, where's the competition for cottonseed? It is in the dairies. And so what our gins are forced to do is to figure out, how much do I have to give back to that farmer in order to keep some margin versus him taking it all and giving it to the dairy? The rolling plains gins, which I mentioned already, you have more rolling plains gins in the smaller category. They don't have that competition, so they're able to keep more of those margins. Now, compress fees, just another one that's important here to mention. Once again, it doesn't discriminate based on size. Cotton compress fees are what they are, basically a pass-through from the compress. And so everybody gets them. And one thing I didn't mention, I don't think you've probably figured out, this is a per bale number. So everybody's getting these. No discrimination versus size classification here. So that brings us to the end of the income that I want to talk about. Once again, there's more information in the paper. But you see here that in income, our larger gins make a little bit more, but they don't make much. Okay, so on the income side, they're making a little bit more, but we're really not seeing any difference yet until we move on into our expenses, the orange section. And as probably many of you expect, labor decreases per bale as gins size increases, especially variable labor. These larger gins have been able to do quite a bit better on their variable labor, so they are saving themselves quite a bit of money there. Okay, now you can move on to repairs, utilities, insurance, and gin hauling. All of those things, once again, we're seeing what we expected to see. As the gin size, as the gin volume increases, they are able to pay less per bale for those. So they're really saving themselves some money at those higher volumes. Okay. So important thing here, though, when we get down to our total cash expenses, so the stuff it costs to make a bale of cotton, okay? Not the other stuff that we all have to pay, the fees and other things here and there, but the stuff it costs to make a bale of cotton. We've got a $10 difference now on cash expenses between our small category and our large category. Now, that middle category right smack in the middle, so we've got a $5 jump there, but $10 per bale savings for our larger gins. That gets significant, okay? Now, those of you that know me know I'm a former banker, so show me the money. We knew that long before Tom Cruise did. So I'm going to show you the money. Please look at the green. Green is very important to us old bankers. And if you look at this, this kind of tells the rest of that picture. When you see that those expenses are lower, what's going to happen to the cash margin? It's up. Okay, so we've got $25 cash margin versus 12 for our smaller categories. And so that's about double. And if you move on down to operating income, there's some other stuff in here. Once again, it's in the paper, not here. We've got more than double for our larger categories. They're really, really coming into the income. So I better hurry. Results, main things to take away here. Net cash margin, net operating income, higher at the larger volumes. That's to be expected, but the numbers are bearing that out also. Now, income comes mainly from three sources. 79% of that income comes from ginning margins, compress fees, and cottonseed margins. Now, say the ginning margins are fixed. What I mean there is that there's no discrimination, once again, by the size classifications. I hear rumors to the effect those have been raised this year, but I haven't seen the numbers on that yet and don't know if it's across the board. Compress fees, once again, same for all the gins. They're all sizes are getting the same compress fees. Cottonseed margins are flexible. They're flexible depending on if you have competition for that cottonseed and depending on what cottonseed price is doing, changes. Variable labor is 27% of our expenses, repairs 13, and then utilities, gin hauling and truck expenses, our utility energy kind of things are 31% of our expenses. So lots of expenses there. Now I'm going to jump ahead and I got to speed along here real fast. The comparison of the two regions separated, this is just a comparison of the expenses. As I already mentioned, High Plains has custom ginning income, so keep that in mind, but the incomes other than that were fairly similar. The difference here in labor, Rolling Plains is saving about $4 per bale in labor when you combine fixed and variable. That's extensive, okay? Now, gin hauling, Rolling Plains is paying more. Gins tend to be farther apart. There's less of them, so they've got to haul that a little bit farther. Lastly, the other thing to point out here, just so you know, the reason for the difference in the other expenses here, the other expense on the High Plains area, much higher. What that is if you've got a gin who is receiving custom ginning income, you have a gin paying custom ginning expenses. That's the difference there. Okay, just to sum up so I don't run out of time. General observations, as expected, total operating income per bale is higher as larger volumes increase. In the separate years when we have larger volumes, all the gins do better, but those gins that are larger always do better. Operating expense, same thing, lower per bale when you have larger volumes. Okay, cottonseed margins have been up during our study time frame. You know, that's really good for our gins. How long that lasts, you know, we never really know, but that's definitely something to keep in mind. And labor costs, we don't have much time to spend on that, but we know that the federal mandated minimum wage is rising. As that rises, gins aren't paying minimum wage, but they're paying hourly. There's upward pressure on those gins to pay higher labor costs, so that's coming along too. So conclusions, gins appear to control their costs as volume has increased. They have more ability to do that, more room to work with, a little bit stronger, maybe can have a little bit more control there. Secondly, upward pressure on those variable labor costs. The federal, the mandated wage going up, that's putting pressure on those. But we've got another issue here too, which we saw very highly in the summer of 08. When those energy costs got high, our skilled labor moved to the oil fields. Whether or not it's still there, it remains to be seen, but those kind of things always put upward pressure on our labor costs. So those are going to continue to go up. And then lastly, moving into that, energy cost. Who would have ever expected what we had happen in the spring of summer of 08? And who would have ever expected we'd be where we are now? Fuel costs are down. Energy costs, well, not so much yet. Hopefully they'll follow, but that still remains to be seen. But how quickly could it happen again? We didn't expect it the first time, but here it may come again. And the important thing for gins is that 31% of those expenses are utility energy kind of costs related to that. So we definitely need to keep watch of that. Not much we can do about it, obviously, but it's something that we definitely have to consider. Thank you very much. Barely.